pleasure to welcome back Chris Powell, who's just back from a whirlwind tour, you might say, and maybe you'd like to start off there today.
I spoke at a conference in Singapore, at the Minds and Money Asia conference in Hong Kong, and I tried to update them over the last year of developments in gold price suppression. I can't say that I find the monetary metals mining industry very interested in the details of how the price of its products is suppressed, but we keep trying to interest them. I did get on CNBC in Hong Kong for about 5 minutes one Monday morning, and I got interviewed by Bullion Star in Singapore, which was, those two interviews were probably worth haranguing the mining industry.
Interesting development you noted before the show with the BIS. It's the Bank of International Settlements, and you have some rather interesting findings for precious metals aficionados.
Our consultant, the BIS, Robert Lamborn, retired businessman in Britain, has been following the BIS for some years now, and he has noted that the BIS has returned to the gold swap and gold derivatives business sensationally over the last year and a half. The BIS has gone from a zero position in gold swaps and derivatives to a position of more than 500, sometimes almost 600 tons of gold swaps that they have arranged, presumably for their clients, their members, their other central banks. This suggests sudden interest by central banks in the gold market. It also suggests a certain supply shortage in the gold market, inducing the BIS to move gold and gold claims around to be applied to the market to control the price, to keep the price from getting out of control. A few months ago, I wrote to the BIS press office about Lamborn's findings, which are based on the BIS's own monthly and annual reports. I asked the BIS, has Lamborn got it right here? Has the bank turned to the gold swap and derivatives business in a big way? And has he got the numbers right? And could you tell me what is the purpose of your activity in the gold swaps and derivatives, and on whose behalf is this undertaken? I got a reply from the BIS, I think within 24 hours, telling me they don't talk about this stuff, and you know, you can get more information in our reports, and you get more information from central banks, which is nonsense. There's no more substantial information about gold in the BIS's monthly or annual reports. If there was, I wouldn't have been asking them about it, and you can't get serious information about gold from any central bank. So we know that there is vast new activity in the gold market by the BIS on behalf of its central bank members. We know that because this is reported in the monthly notes. They try to obscure this as best they can. What does it mean exactly? They will not tell us what it means exactly, which I think is a pretty good indication that it is not innocent activity, that it's very sensitive activity. It's market manipulation activity that cannot be talked about without undermining the whole purpose of the activity. Not conspiracy theory. This is all reports of the BIS, which you can find on their internet site if you know where to look. Have the courage to ask. You can get the door slammed in your face, too, unfortunately. The mainstream financial news media will not do this work, and even those who present themselves as analysts of the gold market will not look into this and will not ask questions about it.
You know, it's hard to ask questions of a organization which is defiant on offering any answers.
If the Financial Times or the New York Times or the Washington Post or Reuters or Bloomberg, any of those major financial news organizations put questions to the BIS, BIS would feel much more compelled to answer. And if the BIS did not answer, there would be a penalty if the normal rules of journalism were followed, because the news organization would publish a prominent story saying that BIS will not answer the following questions about its activity in the gold market. I've felt for some years now that the greatest power of central banking around the world is not the power of infinite money creation, as you know, big a power as that is. I think the biggest power of central banking in the world right now is the complicity of the mainstream financial news organizations.
And not to mention this subterfuge and obfuscation of the truth, I think is at the heart of this push, this incredible groundswell of decentralization. Of course, that's a topic for a very different show, but the entire crypto movement is a decentralizing, I think a better term is disrupting, any place where there is non-productivity issues of inefficiency, primarily in the banking sector and in the financial industry, which is why I think they're shaking in their boots as this movement gains momentum. But again, veered way off topic. Anything else you'd like to discuss that you were sharing on your tour of Asia?
Well, I think the second big development, the gold price suppression scheme over the last year, has been the explosion of new way of filling delivery of COMEX gold and silver futures contracts. There's something called the exchange for physicals procedure on the COMEX. It used to be described as an emergency procedure whereby buyer and seller of a futures contract could agree to take delivery of the contract off the exchange if there was a credible promise of delivery of real metal elsewhere, and the contract would be liquidated that way, and the exchange would be relieved of its responsibility for delivery. This used to be an emergency procedure, hardly ever used. In the last year or so, it seems that exchange for physical procedures have taken over the bulk of delivery claims for gold and silver on the COMEX. The suggestion here, there is not enough gold and silver available for delivery in COMEX vaults, and that delivery has to be transferred elsewhere, presumably to London and the totally opaque London Bullion Market Association system. Our consultant, Harvey Organ, has asked the Commodity Futures Trading Commission what's going on here and has gotten only obfuscation from the CFTC, but something huge has changed, something that used to be described as an emergency procedure for delivering against COMEX gold and silver contracts is now the common procedure. Something very big is up here. It does imply a supply shortage. I think it also implies the involvement of the government in concealing it. We don't know exactly, but again, this is another aspect of the market that cries out for financial journalism. We've informed all the major financial news organizations about it, and of course they haven't picked up on it, I think for the same reasons. But there are big changes underway in the gold and silver futures market, and presumably the real metals market as well. We're not fully informed about them, but we can see the evidence of them and what they're hiding behind. I'd like to think that they herald some changes in the price down the road.
Clearly, I know there will be the listener out there, a lot of very sharp folks listening to our voices, who will think the GATA folks have been, chasing at the heels of these people, these manipulators, for, the better part of two decades at least. Market forces should start to reflect that fact. We have the Shanghai Gold Index, and now we have the, yuan-backed oil contract trading for the first time ever, and it has a gold backing there. So the yuan oil or petroleum contract with a gold backing. With these new developments, when will we see the market forces reflect the manipulation schemes that are clearly going on behind the scenes?
Yeah, I wish I knew, Chris. I think the answer is largely a matter of how much real metal remains in the hands of the central banks that are participating in the scheme, and I think all major central banks, including China's, are participating in it. It depends on how much real metal that they still control and how much real metal they are ready to lose until they call the scheme off. That is the zillion-dollar question. I don't have the answer to it. I think, within the lifetimes of some people who are now alive, we will see a revaluation of the monetary metals and a concurrent revaluation of the currencies. I mean, there's a currency war is raging all around the world right now. Strange thing happened this week where President Trump accused Russia and China of devaluing their currencies when their currencies have been going up against the dollar. It's the dollar that's been devalued. But there's a currency war going on right now. how it will be resolved is, you know, probably the biggest matter of geopolitical world strategy that's going. But when will it happen? I don't know. I try not to offer people a lot of hope here. I am always reminded of George Orwell's vision of the future in 1984, where I guess totalitarians tells Winston Smith, if you want a vision of the future, imagine a boot stamping on a human face forever. I think that is the logic of modern central banking. Even if they do run out of gold and are forced into some sort of revaluation, as they were in 71, and the Plaza Accords, I guess, what was it, 84, 86, you know, that doesn't mean that gold and silver investors are going to reap their deserved benefits. You know, you could have windfall profits taxes on monetary metals. You could have confiscations. I don't know how totalitarian governments will become. I think all GATA can do is try to expose the facts and clamor against deception and in the markets. Try to work toward restoring free markets and transparency and, you know, democracy and truth, justice in the American way. An enormous struggle. And if you want to bet your savings on it, you know, wish you luck. I know I've bet mine. But will we, you know, see the day of deliverance? I don't know. I've had many friends who were far more expert in this field than I, and who saw things much more clearly than I do, and who have died and never saw the reward they were entitled to. I don't know. Not an investment advisor. God is not an investment advisor. We're a nonprofit civil rights and educational organization. I think we are on to the most important political and economic issue in the world that really involves the value of all capital, labor, goods, and services in the world, which is, you know, pretty much everything. But the power we are up against is not gonna give up easily, and it may not give up even when it's exposed. A very limited amount of what GATA can do here. The logic of our work is that there is a huge unfillable short position in the monetary metals as a result of central bank creation of gold and silver credits against metal that doesn't exist. I mean, the logic of that is that the monetary metals are spectacularly undervalued. But will governments permit that value ever to be realized? I don't know. They may permit it if it serves their purposes in a worldwide currency revaluation. They may not permit it even then.
It's a very Orwellian-like scenario you've outlined here, and I think that, you know, the key player there, Winston, would feel very much at home today in these markets. Orwell's probably doing backflips, as are, I guess, the characters from Ayn Rand, Atlas Shrugged as well. So just playing out in real time. And will the powers that be, will the big players, will the policymakers actually let free markets, let the invisible hand that Adam Smith wrote about come back into play here? I mean, will we see these markets break free from the shackles of the manipulators? And that's what we're all sort of waiting for. We're starting to see technical signs of that, as your colleague Bill Murphy has done a great job outlining here on the show for years, but it's really starting to build up some momentum. So, you know, maybe as we're starting to lose our enthusiasm about the time the markets start to exceed our expectations.
If enthusiasm and sentiment in the monetary metals sector, Chris, ever meant anything, Bill and I would have gladly committed suicide. and you know, the metals would have gone to the moon right now. But I think you're right. The immediate cost of this system is the destruction of markets everywhere, the destruction of free markets. And if you believe, as we and GATA do, that free markets are the great engines of human progress and democracy, then the destruction of free markets is a catastrophe.
It's going to veer me off topic for just a few moments, but we believe, who are, you know, huge gold and precious metals aficionados, also believers in the crypto movement. The Bitcoin phenomenon, Ethereum and the others, are actually paving the way for the precious metals, because as a decentralized force that is highly resistant to government intervention and things of that nature, these protocols, or assets, if you will, are doing their best to reflect the hyperinflation that we think is simmering just below the surface, that's been held back by the central bankers in particular for so long. We're hopeful, again, we don't know the future, that that will spill over into the physical markets, gold and silver bullion, which then will, of course, overthrow the manipulation in the paper market.
Currencies continue having some success, governments will stamp them out as best they can. Governments cannot abide competition in money. Money is how they control the world. They control money. And if there are competitive forms of money, whether they are the monetary metals or cryptocurrencies, governments are threatened by that. If there are ways that ordinary people can opt out of government-controlled financial systems, governments lose power. That's, you know, simply the way it is. It's us or them. If there's ever freedom of currencies, governments will be, you know, much less powerful than they are right now. I think this has been admitted. I think even President Roosevelt admitted this in explaining to people the confiscation in gold that he arranged. He talked about the supreme importance to government of control over the monetary system. Governments control the world by issuing money. If there are other issuers of money, say, you know, the mining industry through the monetary metals or cryptocurrency creators, then, you know, your word is decentralized. Well, you've got much more than a decentralized system. All of a sudden, you've got a democratic system. Anybody can issue his own money, and anybody can give it any value he wants to give. I mean, that's a democratic and even libertarian world. Do you think governments are going to stand for that?
They're having a little more of an adoptive attitude, similar to email circa 1994, 1995, where, you know, it was only the bad actors who had access to the internet and email. I think we could still be in the early adopter phase. And whether or not they can wipe it out, well, again, that's one of the neater aspects of cryptography, is it's highly resistant. You can't just walk into Google headquarters or the YouTube headquarters, right, and march out the CEO who shouldn't have done this or that or the other, because it's highly decentralized. And I think you might agree, for the first time in world history, there is the potential for a global decentralized currency where everyone has access to it. It might be a person who just found an iPhone or an Android, you know, on the streets of Calcutta, or, you know, Venezuela, where there's a huge currency crisis right now, and there's a small miner who has free access to electricity. So again, in the West, I think this is less of a big issue for us, because we have access to the banking, we have access to financial services, we have brokerage access at almost every level of society. But for the third world and even some of the BRICS nations, this will be, I think, a godsend. Keep in mind, this is an early movement here. You could say Satoshi Nakamoto, whomever that is, maybe it was Hal Finney, that's another debate. It was created 2008, didn't really catch any steam till 2010, 2011 when I started mining. The idea here is pretty sound, though, because it goes back to the cypherpunks of the 80s and 90s who really wanted to have freedom. We had a few attempts at that, and Tim Draper, you know, the billionaire VC Silicon Valley, who has pointed out, look, you know, we only have about a $3 billion crypto market now. It's tiny. It's fractional. I mean, look, the gold market is $7, $8 trillion. We really have exponential growth ahead. And I think when we start to rival the gold market in size, you're right, regulators will say, wait a minute, we have a real viable threat. My hope is, at that point, it will be too late. The genie out of the bottle. The regulators, policymakers will have very little choice but to adopt some type of blockchain-backed system of their own. I mean, it's probably inevitable. You know, we're dealing with clunky pocket knife currency with the greenback right now relative to the decked out Swiss Army knife of cryptos. That's really what's on the horizon. But you really brought up something interesting in the pre-talk, JP Morgan, that they have approximately 134 million ounces of silver in their company stockpile. And we know that they've been heavily involved in the markets, manipulating price. It's documented. Give us an idea of whether or not you agree with Ted Butler's analysis in this area.
Ted has determined that J.P. Morgan Chase has a huge physical silver stockpile that has been developing over recent years. He believes Morgan is controlling the silver price of in the futures markets. I'm not in a position to argue with him, but I do disagree with Ted as to what's really behind this. I think Ted is very reluctant to concede the possibility that Morgan is not acting for itself, but rather for clients. And we know a few years ago, Blythe Masters, who was then running the commodity desk for Morgan Chase, went on CNBC and echoed a statement that Jamie Dimon had made that Morgan Chase has no position of its own in the monetary metals markets, that the only positions that Morgan had were client positions. Now, unfortunately, nobody asked Morgan Chase, well, who are the clients that you're running these gold and silver accounts for? I would argue, as you know, Morgan is a primary dealer in U.S. government securities and often has acted officially at the behest of the Federal Reserve and Treasury Department during financial crises, that it's immensely unlikely that Morgan would be playing so heavily in a market as sensitive as the monetary metals market if it was not doing so at the behest of the U.S. government or another government that had the approval of the U.S. government. Now, I don't necessarily believe anything Morgan Chase says, but Morgan Chase did insist a few years ago it had no position of its own in the monetary metals, that it was just managing client positions. That being the case, I imagine that Morgan is managing government positions in the monetary metals help keep the monetary metals under control. Maybe that position is a U.S. government position. Maybe it's a position for the Chinese government. The U.S. government is allowing Morgan to run. I think it's exceedingly unlikely that Morgan would be playing so heavily in such a sensitive market without the express approval of the United States government.
The other argument that we've heard throughout the blogosphere and within the precious metals community is just what might they do with all of that bullion? I mean, is it there as a potential threat? I'm sure you read that the president of Russia, Putin, just started stockpiling silver in their coffers.
Well, it's a monetary metal. Silver, over the course of history, it was more common, the monetary metal, than gold. It's, you know, more available in the Earth's crust and more available for use as money at lesser value than gold. It also is an immensely strategic metal, more so than gold, because it has some wonderful industrial and even medical uses.
Didn't we have a 3 billion ounce strategic stockpile, which was eventually entirely sold off? Some of the nuclear enrichment programs in Tennessee, as well as the Southwest United States, but also for the Silver Eagle sale.
The United States demonetized silver from its coinage back in 1965. President Johnson issued a signing statement when he signed the demonetization bill, explicitly warned investors and speculators not to buy silver in expectation that the price would rise as a result of demonetization, because the United States, the president said, would dishoard metal as necessary to control the price and keep the price down. Now, this is an official statement by the president of the United States in 1965, saying the government was prepared to use its silver stockpile for price control. Now, you know, it's only self-evident that the government was using dishoarding from its gold reserves to keep the price down, and doing that in the open right through the London Gold Pool in 1968, you know, only to be expected. But government was using dishoarding to control not just the gold price, but to control the silver price as well. And, you know, we thought that the silver stockpile was exhausted decades ago. But, you know, now Morgan seems to be amassing one through the COMEX. To whom does it really belong? Does it belong to Morgan? I doubt it. Does it belong to the United States government or the Chinese government? I think that's far more likely.
You talk about the potential for a big disruption within the community as the truth about true stockpiles, if you will, in central bank coffers becomes known. Do you see a point, a watershed moment, if you will, where our officials bring their information above board?
Well, there are currency revaluations, international currency revaluations by agreement. Every 25, 30 years or so, I think we are due for one. I rather expect that if the real metal available to central banks is running low, that central banks will have to get ahead of a short squeeze by revaluing the monetary metals. That they will probably do it by announcement on a Sunday night before the Asian markets open, saying that, you know, they're going to be buyers of gold and or silver and, you know, their own currencies at certain preset levels, and that, you know, this will be another currency revaluation. I think they will need higher gold and silver prices in order to maintain the gold and silver price control scheme at more manageable levels. I don't think these prices can be sustained much longer, but, you know, I don't know what it's a lot of this going to be determined by how people react, by how the markets react. People and the markets could change things tomorrow if they wanted to buy enough real metal and take it out of the banking system.
The irony of your statement is less than half of America has $1,000 in savings, but 70-75% claim to have less than $500 of a cushion in the event of an emergency. I think the real question mark then becomes, how will John Q. Public, how will the typical everyday homme moyen procure any metals, even if they want to?
The day of the revaluation will be, you know, too late. Others will have already gotten it. But all I meant to say was that individuals can hasten the day simply by buying metal and taking it out of the banking system, not buying paper. You know, I saw a story on, I think, Bloomberg yesterday about some fund manager thought that gold is now the only safe haven, and that he was moving his investments out of equities and into gold. But what was he doing? He was buying exchange-traded funds. Well, if you're buying GLD, it's just paper. Not just paper, it's also paper that's used to hit the market as necessary, keep the price down. I mean, if you're going to buy metal that's really just paper and that is in the control of the manipulators, you know, might as well flush your money down the toilet. But investor can hasten the day by buying metal and taking it out of the system. That will hasten the day when central banks have to revalue the metals, revalue their currencies, and let free markets resume to a certain extent assessing value around the world. But when will this day come? I don't know. And
Chris Powell, giving us a lot of cuisine for cogitation, let's say, today. As we wrap up, any closing thoughts you think the listeners...
Well, I always encourage people to check us out at our internet site, gata.org. Typically put out several email dispatches every day. People can enroll to receive those. They just go to our internet site and sign up in the right column of the... You know, as I think I said, we're a nonprofit, federally tax-exempt educational civil rights organization in the United States, and we function entirely by donations, and we're not getting any from Newmont Mining or Barrick Gold or any of those big guys. We do get some money from ordinary investors. We do have a few friends who help us out from time to time, but we can always use donations to support our research and consultants and travel and to keep clamoring for whatever good it does. And we mean to stick with it. Thanks very much, Chris.